Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 5 of the Damn Horse Toys podcast. My name is Chris Damhorst, and I will be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. On the show with us today is Doctor of Veterinarian Medicine, Dr. Ian Stone, who's going to talk to us about pets, babies, and kids. Do pets get jealous when a new baby arrives? What's the best first pet for your kids, and how should kids approach a dog they don't know? These topics and a few more on our show today. We have Dr. Stone with us today, and we're so glad that he could take time to sit down with us. I think we got some great questions. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
And what we'd like to get into, first of all, is pets and new babies.
Oh, that's a great one. That's a great subject.
A lot of our customers now, they have new babies. They're about to have new babies, and they may have pets in the family already. They may not. They may be thinking about getting a pet. So we had a lot of questions about that. And the first one that we had, and we get this a lot with new siblings, but, you know, the jealousy factor that comes in, the new baby comes into the household, and there might be a 1 or 2 year old baby that's in there, and there are issues that parents, you know, talk to us about that we've heard. But pets can get jealous too, I guess.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. When people ask me questions about the emotional content that their pets feel, you know, I think it's very common and understandable that we tend to project our own emotions on the pets. And that's the first mistake, okay? We don't really obviously understand what an animal feels. We have to look at a cause and effect type situation.
Okay.
And to make assumptions about what that animal feels and then to act on those assumptions, most of the time we're getting it wrong. So let's take a common pet. Let's take a dog. Okay. Let's look at the structure that a dog has, both, you know, biologically, genetically, and then imposed from outside.
Okay.
Right? So we've taken a creature from the wild that exists in a social structure that we have a basic understanding of, but there's nuances, obviously, that probably escape us. And then we take this animal and we habituate it, we feed it, we take it out of the social group in which it develops, and basically impose our own expectations on it, and with very little understanding of where this all comes from in the dog.
Okay.
Now we put it in this group situation where we add another group member.
The new baby,
right?
Okay.
So now we look at the dog, right? What happens in a group of dogs when a new member comes on? Well, you know, in a group of dogs or a group of canids, we should be more general. You know, there's usually one or two at the most mating pair, and the rest of the animals in that group sort of support that mating pair. They may have some genetic relationship, you know, cousins, siblings, etc., or even previous, you know, litters.
Okay.
You know, so they could be related to this new puppy genetically as well. And it's a basic, you know, evolutionary biology theory that most groups of animals want to support their own propagation. Right?
So the dog would think that the new baby potentially is one of his pups or a new member of the litter kind of thing. So it's almost seeing it as another dog.
Yeah, and
possibly.
That's the bit of the backstory right there, right? So we take that basic instinct that a dog has when it's living in a group to support the propagation of their own genetic material or the mating pair's genetic material, right?
Okay.
So, you know, the new baby comes along. Is it jealousy that's motivating a problem with that, or is it disruption of the hierarchy, the hierarchical status of this dog in relationship to access to the owners? So when we say the word jealousy, when you think of what jealousy means in human terms, right? You have something that I want and I, you know, I'm going to go to get it, right?
Right.
Or I'm going to be upset about not having it.
And this would be affection from the owners, right?
It could be anything.
Okay.
It could be walks. It could be food. It could be. But I just think it's sort of naive and oversimplifying to say that the dog feels jealousy.
Okay.
There's a disruption to a routine. There's new noises that are going on in the house that the dog's unfamiliar with. There are new smells. And frankly, there's also new attractions, right? There's both breast milk, which is, a very nutritious, fatty substance that the dog smells. And there's responses to that. There's, poop.
Right. I mean, the poop smell.
And the poop smells good.
To the dog.
Yeah. The dog wants that poop. Okay. And here we are just wrapping it up in a diaper and throwing it in the garbage. What a waste.
That's perfectly good poop.
You know, perfectly good poop. I could be eating that, you know? And so, well, dog could. Anyway, so when we think about how the dog is acting and we ascribe the emotion of jealousy to it, I think that that's not fair. So,
okay.
Yeah, it just
so you need to simplify it a little bit more as far as the routines are going to change.
Yeah, routines are going to change. Noises, smells, everything that the dog is familiar with up to this point is now disrupted. And how do we create the environment for that dog to successfully navigate those changes?
Okay. Will a dog, and I want to get into that sure, but will dogs typically want to try to protect that baby? Are there real dangers that are involved in that? What do you see mostly?
So, great question. So, most dogs, depending on the breeding, of course, would probably react to the baby in a protective way. It's a new member of the group. Their status is supportive.
Okay. Right.
That's their position in the family unit. And so, yes, there is the potential for protection. There's also the potential for competition.
Okay.
And
is that breed specific, or
it can be highly breed specific?
Okay.
I'll tell you a story. I had a dog when I met my wife. Matter of fact, we met because of our dogs.
Okay.
And unfortunately, her dog died when the kids were really young. But my dog was still alive when both girls were at a fairly young age. And he was, 14 or 15. He was a breed called a Queensland Heeler, an Australian cattle dog.
Okay, very smart dog.
Very smart dog, extremely protective, extremely loyal, but also highly devoted to only one or two people. Oh. These are working dogs. And understand that all these instincts in dogs that we want, like the herding instinct, okay? Mm-hmm. All of those types of instincts are basically a prey predator, a prey-driven instinct that's been modified through breeding and selective interaction to create a dog that does something that we want it to do. So, my dog, Blue, really was not super interested in the kids until they were at a point where they were dropping food on the ground. That being said, and the kids could not really touch Boo Boo. He would nip at them and stuff.
Oh.
And I used this as an opportunity to teach the kids, look, you need to be careful how you touch a dog, because he never hurt them.
Right.
But he scared them.
Okay.
And so there was this time that, we went to the beach, and Boo Boo at the beach was a crazy man. Even at 15, he was still running up and down, chasing other dogs and chasing birds.
Uh-huh.
And I had both girls who were in toddler stage at the time next to me. Boo Boo, basically, it was the first time at the beach. He wouldn't leave our side. He wouldn't go near the girls, but he stood in between the girls and any other dog who came over.
Mm.
And he didn't do anything. He just stood there. And other dogs would come up and sniff at him. And then if they got too close to the girls, he would just move in between the girls and the other dog.
Oh, interesting.
He wanted nothing to do with the kids. They were noisy and they could hurt him.
Right.
But he, without even, without even being trained to do that, he got in between outside dogs and my children.
So he still had that herding background, basically that programming in him that he wanted to fulfill, essentially, when he got out there. So
he's there to protect the flock. He's there to protect the group,
right,
whatever it
is. He doesn't necessarily need to like the flock, but he's there to protect it.
Yeah, who here hasn't worked at a job that they didn't like?
Right.
But you still got to do the job, and really, you got to do it well, okay?
Right.
So, yeah, breeding affects it. I also think that the animal's innate status, situation, some people are more aggressive, more type A people.
Mm-hmm.
There's dogs like that too.
Yeah.
And so that dog, would react one way. And a person or a dog who's more passive, maybe more willing to just kind of go with the flow, that dog might react a different way.
Okay. So you have a new pet, you have a new baby, and you're bringing it home, and you already have a pet that's in the house.
Yeah.
And I know we've been focusing a lot on dogs, and I'd kind of like to maybe continue with that because we're on topic with that. But what are some of the things? So all of a sudden, these new noises, these new smells, new sounds, the schedules change. Feedings of the new baby at 2 a.m., the dog's not used to that. How do you make these transitions? What are some of the things that you can do? And in some cases, people listening to this may have already brought their baby home, so they don't have 3 months before the baby was born to do it. They're in the situation now.
So let's take it from 3 months before okay. and then move it into the situation you just described. Because I get asked this question a lot.
Okay.
It's a very common phenomenon for young couples when they're first getting together and there's a seriousness to the relationship to get an animal together. And a lot of times it's a dog or a cat. Most times, frankly, it's a dog. And it's almost like a test drive situation. Let's see how we do with the dog.
Right.
And then let's start talking about the rest of our lives together. I see it all the time.
Okay.
Okay. So, you know, now it's happening. You've had the dog 4 or 5 years. You've gotten married. You're having your baby. It's 3 months beforehand. What do you do? Well, easy thing to do is think back on all the interactions that dog's had with children up to this point. Have those been positive interactions, negative interactions? How has the dog behaved? Has it acted fearful?
Mm-hmm.
Has it acted interactive? Is it acting guarding, like it's guarding its food or toys, etc.? So already you can get an idea of what the personality of that dog might be like relative to kids. And you don't need to do any planning here. You just need to think back. How has this dog interacted with children in the past? If you have nieces, nephews, friends, etc., you can, you know, put the dog in a situation where, obviously you don't want anybody hurt, but you put the dog in the situation where you get to observe, how does it interact?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just cowering in the corner or not? So that's step number one. 3 months, 3-4 months beforehand, just start getting a mental image of how your dog behaves around children.
And you can get your dog around more children as well, too. So maybe if they're not used to, you have nieces or nephews or whatever,
exactly.
You know, you try to introduce that
slowly.
Do
it with someone else's children first.
Right.
You know, oh, my dog bites. Okay, sorry about that.
Well, we know now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But the other thing that is really helpful, you can introduce the dogs to the noises that kids make. You know, without bringing the kids to a ball game, you can tape record or play a lot of baby sounds, crying and giggling and googling and whatever, and just get an idea what the dog does. I mean, some dogs, frankly, don't care.
Yeah.
They just lay there, okay, whatever. Yeah, it's a bunch of noise, but, you know, I hear them playing Pearl Jam at, you know, high levels, so I can deal with that. I can deal with this.
Right.
So that's another easy thing to do. Now let's talk up to the point where, all right, you're in the hospital, you've just had your baby, and your husband's there with you, but he's going to go home and check on the dog and, you know, and get you some stuff that you forgot to put in your bag and bring back to the hospital.
Yeah.
This is a great opportunity to take blankets home with birthing materials on them.
Right.
You bring the blanket home with a little bit of poop and blood and, you know, even milk, you know, just
the scents.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, you let the dog smell that. Let the dog interact with that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and for dogs, you know, their sense of smell is so important to them. It tells them so much about the world.
Mm.
You can start introducing that baby to that dog almost immediately. Okay. The other thing, you know, the first week or so of a baby's life at home, they're not really making a lot of noise, so that's not going to be a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if there's any little noises from the hospital that the baby's making, you could, you know, record those too. You'll probably be doing some recording anyway, so why not bring that home and put that on the stereo at home and let the dog hear that.
And then kind of show, right, you know? Exactly.
So those are easy things you can do. You know, I think that letting the dog have a space of its own, I mean, most people should be doing this anyway. You should be crate training the dog, or, you know, there's an area where the dog has its bed. You know, keep that area where it is,
right.
And allow the dog to go to it and be there without, you know, oh, where's Fluffy? We need to get Fluffy out here to smell the baby. Come here, Fluffy,
yeah.
See the new baby.
Right.
You know what? Don't force the issue.
Yeah.
Dog's natural curiosity will bring it out, and it'll, you know, eventually it'll want to see what's going on out there. Don't push it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And how important are schedules to dogs too? So the schedules, so hopefully we have kind of the scent down, you know, the dog has their own space, but the routines now, which to dogs are very important.
You know, I dogs are a lot like children in this regard, I think. If you define their early life with a schedule, then they're going to want that schedule.
Okay.
And if you define their early life as kind of like, let's go out for a walk today. It's a beautiful day.
Right.
And that doesn't usually happen. It's, you know, it's no big deal. So I don't think there's any right or wrong way to do that. Just like I don't think there's any right or wrong way to do that with kids. But if you do have a schedule with the dog, it'll make the dog feel more secure if you stick with the schedule.
Okay.
You know, if the dog's used to being walked at noon every day, try to keep up with that. It may not have to be the same length walk, you know,
mm-hmm.
but you're going to be taking your baby out anyway. So, you know, get the dog on the leash and go for a walk.
Right. How about the 2 a.m., you know, disruptions?
You know,
is that dogs are not, I mean, if they're in their own space, then
yeah,
they shouldn't.
I mean, think about your life in general anyway, right? I mean, we have two dogs at home. We've got cats. And I mean, you know, 3 a.m, the cat's waking me up to let it outside. You know, dogs are disrupted by that. I don't think that 2 a.m. disruption for most dogs is a big deal.
Is a big deal?
Yeah.
Okay.
It might be a big deal for us. And then, and then we might project that on the dog.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right.
Poor Fluffy is so upset because I was up at 2 a.m. feeding Jackson. Really, you're the one who's upset. Fluffy could care less.
Yeah. Okay.
Because Fluffy gets to sleep for 16 hours a day anyway,
sure,
you know?
Sure. Which brings us into our next question about sleeping then. So, you know, a lot of people have their pets in bed with them.
Yeah.
And now that potentially could dramatically change. And that space that we were talking about a little bit earlier, that space might be your space in your bed. So you've got a bigger issue now to deal with that, you know, that dog or cat can't be in that bed anymore with you because, you know, maybe the baby's coming in there with you for naps or...
Right.
So is it easy to get a dog out of your bed fairly short notice?
I mean, so first of all, cats could care less.
Okay.
They'll just find another comfortable spot to sleep for 18 hours or 20 hours or however often they sleep, you know. But the dog, yeah, I mean, you know, we allow our dogs in the bed for a moment, but we don't really, I don't like the dog. We have a queen size bed, you know, there's just not enough room for everybody.
Yeah.
My little Chihuahua used to sleep in the bed with me, and even him, I kicked out of the bed. About 6 months ago.
It's a little off topic, but is it a good idea to have your dog
it's
in bed
preference.
With you? Or not?
It's personal preference. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's up to us. We're the ones who seek the comfort,
right?
You know?
True.
I mean, a lot of people say, "Oh, my dog, he needs to be." Well, you know what? He'd be fine in a crate. You're the one who needs it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's okay. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Right.
But you know, now that you've got a baby in a bassinet next to your bed,
right?
You know, what's going to happen if you roll over in the middle of the night and you roll over on top of the dog? I don't think the dog's going to associate that with the baby. I mean, it's not like they put that together. Oh, this baby's taking my spot and she just rolled over.
And get
you.
Mad.
Yeah, no, that's ridiculous.
Right.
But you do have to think, well, how's the dog going to get away from you rolling over? Is it going to jump into the baby's bassinet and jump onto the floor and then wake the baby up or knock the bassinet over? You got to think it through a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, personally, I think dogs do just fine in a crate or a bed next to the bed.
Okay.
If they're in the bed with you and you want to maintain that, just expect some inconvenience.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And expect that you're going to be tired and you're going to be trying to do stuff and the dog might be in the way.
Yeah. If you have to get them out and they don't want to get out.
Well,
is there
a whole separate thing.
Is that
you
like
know, there are situations where dogs will resource guard, okay?
Uh-huh.
Whether it's food, whether it's access to the owner, whether it's access to the bed, and that has its own separate ideology, right?
Okay.
I mean, if a dog is resource guarding,
What does resource guarding mean exactly?
So you've got something that the dog's used to having.
Okay.
And the dog is acting in an overly protective way towards that.
Okay.
And so you go to remove, the food bowl.
Oh.
And the dog growls at you or snaps at you or guards that food bowl and won't let you take it away.
Right.
That is a whole separate set of behavioral issues that need to be addressed. And we can talk about it, but it might take up most of your show.
Oh, okay.
That's a different set of circumstances.
Okay. And procedures that you take. So a little bit more about, well, maybe we can get you back on the show. We can talk about that.
Sure, we can talk about
that. That'd be awesome. Okay. Well, let's move on to first pets then a little bit too, I think, is really important is that, you know, you have this new baby and maybe they're getting a little bit older and you decide that, you know, you want to start introducing pets. You know, you want them sensitive to pets and have a pet in the home. A lot of people had pets when they were kids growing up and they thought it was a good idea and now they want to do it for their own children. Are there first pets that you recommend? Do you get people? I mean, you know, does goldfish count? Does gerbil count?
Yeah.
Does guinea pig count? Do you start big? Do you start small?
I think it's highly variable for the family. I grew up in a family where we weren't really, my parents had cats. And they did not want a dog. And so basically we grew up with cats. We had a dog for like a year and a half. Me, obviously, in my chosen profession here, I would probably have, I mean, I've had goats and sheep. I got chickens now. I got two dogs, two cats. It's my personal belief that children, and I think there's a lot of research that backs this up.
And you have children yourself, by the way. I should point that out.
Two little girls. That children learn more about their world, become more compassionate, empathetic people, and are more resistant to diseases if they're raised in a house with pets.
Interesting.
Matter of fact, there's been a lot of evidence over the years, you know, not to, you know, say anything bad about any group of people. I'm just telling you something that I read. The Japanese are a very antiseptic society, from what I understand. They're very concerned with hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, hand sanitizer, washing the hands, which is all great stuff. And they're also very pet-oriented people.
Mm-hmm.
They look at the sanitation of the pet very, you know, they're concerned about that.
Right.
They also have a high incidence of allergies in young children and in adults because of that. It's believed that, you know, you expose the immune system at a young age to a lot of things, you create immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a hyperimmunity like an allergy is.
Okay.
So there's another reason to have pets. You know, the more dirt, if you will, safe dirt,
yeah,
that you expose your kids to, you know, the healthier, hardier they're going to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there's some things that dogs can transmit to children, and we can talk about that. But I think the first pet, you know, your first pet, it's up to the family, you know? I mean, if a goldfish is a good pet for you, if you live in a tiny little apartment and a goldfish is the pet you want, hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
If, you know, you have bigger expectations, maybe, you know, it's a dog. Or my brother just got a dog. His children are 11 and 9.
Mm.
And they have never had a dog. They had a cat for a while. They've had hamster. And the kids really wanted a dog. And so they finally got a dog.
Oh.
You know? And so, I don't know. I'm a big proponent of dogs and cats.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of what I do. But, you know, if you're allergic to them, there's other animals that you could look at.
Yeah.
Rabbits. You know, yeah. I know you guys have a rabbit.
Oh, yeah. We love it. The kids go nuts for that.
Rabbits. Yeah. I mean, rabbits are awesome pets, frankly. They're like little herbivorous cats, you know.
And that was our first pet, by the way. The rabbit was our first pet, which was great. You know, it was just perfect. So, and you talk about dogs and cats, too. Do you recommend a particular breed for a first? Because a lot of people are going to get a dog or cat as a first pet, potentially.
Well, first of all, it's not a breed. There are breeds that I think are really good for families, and I'll mention what those are.
Okay.
But I'm also going to tell you that I've gotten every single one of my dogs from the shelter.
Right.
And the shelters these days are so sophisticated. They have volunteer systems in place, foster systems in place, where a lot of these dogs come in and go back out again with a foster family, where they're exposed and their behaviors are assessed and training is started. By the time you adopt a dog from a shelter, you know, one of these types of shelters,
mm-hmm.
you're getting a dog that's, you know,
been through a series of filters and testing and all that. Yeah, because
you know,
I think that's a misconception, isn't it? That, you know, and I think I had this before I talked to you about it, is that a dog gets picked up off the street, gets put into the pound, then immediately gets handed over to a family that has no idea. And I think, you know, back then, that was the concern that I had, essentially, was that you have no idea what you're getting as far as a dog. But it's a lot different now these days.
Oh, it's so different now. I mean, you know, in Santa Clara, where, you know, I've had some experience with their shelter and the San Jose shelter, they've got whole volunteer teams that take these dogs for walks, that do basic training with them. You know, there's referrals that are made to trainers and local dog behavior groups. So, yeah, I mean, by the time you're getting a dog from a shelter, you know, the general public, you've got a pretty hardwired situation. You know, it should be pretty basic because they have a lot of liability. Right.
Right, handing a dog over to.
They give you this dog and it bites someone's face off, you know.
Right, right.
It's, you know, it's a huge liability. So
yeah.
Understand that they do a lot, and I would tell everybody, go to a good shelter to get your dog. Now, there are some people who would rather go to a breeder, and I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not against breeders if it's done right. There, you should be aware. I definitely want to bring this up. There are tons of puppy mills that operate in Mexico and in the Midwest. And people, you know, I got this dog through a Craigslist ad, or I got this dog online, and it was a $500. It's a $500 purebred Havanese, you know, and you meet somebody at a rest stop or a gas station, you slap your $500 down, and they give you this piece of paper with a lineage and a guarantee.
Right.
And goodbye.
Yeah.
You'll never see these people again, and that guarantee means naught. So, you know, guys, caveat emptor, I believe is the Latin, right? Buyer
right.
beware.
Right.
Right? I mean, think about where you're going to get these dogs, and think about where would I go to get a child if I was adopting a child? Would I just buy it off the street?
Right.
You know, would I answer right. a Craigslist ad, hey, I don't want this baby anymore, come get it?
Yeah.
You know, think about it. Go to a place that specializes in this.
Absolutely.
Go to a reputable breeder where you can go visit the dam and the sire and see the breeding operation and see how clean it is.
Yeah.
See how the people interact with their dogs. You know, I mean, most good breeding operations, you know, it's going to be pretty obvious. You don't need a degree in veterinary medicine to know that it's a good place.
Right, right.
You're going to get a good feeling.
Yeah.
And the other thing I get is a lot of people, oh, I bought this dog because I felt so sorry for it. He just looked so bedraggled when I met the person at the rest stop. And I know it was a bad situation, but I just couldn't let it go home with this person. It just
yeah.
was horrible. So I gave him the $500. I mean, what are you thinking?
No.
You just basically gave that person $500 to go breed another bunch of dogs.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big thing right now in people who manufacture methamphetamines, crystal meth. You know, dog breeding is one of the ways that they finance their operations.
Interesting.
You know, so who knows? If this person's missing teeth and is really skinny and unkempt and they're selling you a French bulldog for $2,000, maybe you ought to think about where that $2,000 is going.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's so many dogs that go through the shelters. I'm sure you probably see it on a regular basis, unfortunately. So
something like 10 million dogs and cats. I think it's something like that now. Yeah. It used to be a lot more when I was in vet school. It's
yeah.
like 30 million wow. are put to sleep every year in this country.
So definitely check out the pounds,
yeah,
check out the shelters first, and they've got great programs where they've vetted these dogs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as far as breeds, because you did ask breeds, you know what?
Yeah.
Kind of breeds. I think pretty much all the retriever breeds have been bred to be very, you know, easygoing dogs, affectionate. You know, golden retrievers, Labradors, retrievers. That's why you see them all over. That's why you see so many families with them.
Sure.
I would stay away from some of the pure hunting dogs. You know, like you know, Chessies. Although, don't get mad at me, any of you Chesapeake Bay retriever dogs, dog lovers. You know, the,
well, we're talking about kids though. Too,
yeah,
we're, you know,
yeah.
we're talking about.
So you know, those are always a pretty safe bet. French bulldogs, Boston terriers, extremely happy dogs. Pugs, great little dogs. I tell everybody stay away from English bulldogs. They're wonderful dogs as far as personality, but they are so messed up. We have done that breed such a disservice.
Oh.
And you know, unless you got a ton of money you just want to spend,
yeah.
you know, on keeping your dog from dying all the time,
because yeah.
you know, Frenchies or sorry, English bulldogs have so many problems.
Respiratory with the nose and
exactly.
the face, yeah.
I mean, okay. don't further that industry.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
cute, but they're messed up.
Right.
I think I'm a big fan of poodles. Smart breed, very, very intelligent breed, usually very stately and pretty easy to get along with.
Mm-hmm.
The breeds I recommend people stay away from for children would be German Shepherds and Rottweilers. I think Dobermans are a great dog. I absolutely adore Dobermans.
Mm-hmm.
But because they fall into that group of kind of you know, guard type dogs,
yeah,
and powerful dogs, you know, for somebody who loves the breed, I get it. I mean, I'm gonna get a million people with Rottweilers now calling me, my Rottweiler's awesome with my kids.
Yeah,
no problem. But when was the last time you heard of a French bulldog killing a kid?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Rottweiler can be a great breed, but their potential for powerful destruction is much greater.
Yeah.
You
and
know?
just don't take the chance. I mean,
you're
absolutely
chance?
Right. There's a lot of Rottweilers out there that are very loving and very caring
yeah.
dogs and all that. But at the same time, they do have the power behind them.
Yeah,
you know,
unless you're somebody who just, oh, I have to have a Rottweiler.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, frankly, I would question you there. But I had one for 10 years, by the way, so I'm pretty familiar
yeah.
with the breed.
Oh, well, that's good.
You know, so, yeah, stick with the retrievers, the smaller breeds, the poodles. You know, a lot of the herding dogs are caution.
Okay.
Are caution for me with kids. Although I personally am a big fan of the herding dogs. I have.
Yeah.
Always had herding dogs, and I have one now that's great with my kids.
Yeah.
For the novice dog owner, herding breeds aren't always the best breed to start with.
Okay.
Unless you're, you know, you're really focused, that's the kind of breed you want, and then you better go do some research.
Yeah.
You know, you better.
Because they need a lot of attention. I mean, they're highly intelligent dogs.
Ugh.
They need that interaction.
They need a job.
They need.
You know what I mean?
Right.
They're like the stockbrokers of the dog world.
Okay.
They're super intense, hyper-focused. Instead of making money, they're going to go create chaos if you don't give them something to do.
Okay. So. Interesting. Dr. Stone has his own radio show, too. And recently he had his young daughter on, and they had a great conversation. And I just want to bring this up, Dr. Stone, about safety with kids and pets out in public. Because, you know, you're going to be going to the park more. You know, with your new kids, you know, kids that are a year, 2, 3, 4 years old, 5 years old. And there are certain things that really should think about when your kids potentially are going to interact with other children. And I thought you did such a great job. It was a conversation between you and your daughter about, and obviously your daughter knows,
yeah.
But what a great way to kind of convey that knowledge and that information. I was kind of hoping that we could talk a little bit about that as well, too,
yeah.
Because you may not have a pet, but hey, you have children now and you're going to be in public and the smart ways now to approach dogs that might be sitting at a restaurant outside
exactly.
or and all that. What how did you start? What would you first recommend? I guess?
Well, so first of all, there's just some basic points I always want to make. And I have this conversation a lot with people. It is ultimately the parent's responsibility always to monitor and monitor the interaction between their children and any animals.
I think it's interesting that you say that, and I don't want to interrupt you right now, but I think you're right, because I think as a young parent myself, you kind of turn that responsibility a little bit over to the pet owner
yeah.
that, okay, if they're going to bring it out into public,
right.
that pet should be behaving a certain way.
Right.
And at the same time, as a parent, I don't know, you don't want to be rude about going up and trying to say, oh, don't, you know,
yes.
don't touch that dog, or assuming that dog is dangerous, which, you know, potentially is an insult to that owner. So now you've got this awkward social situation.
No kidding.
But you, as a parent, you really need to make sure that you're the final say in that.
Yeah.
And obviously it's the safety of your child, and I learned that. But, you know, these are things that I went through a little bit. So,
well, so, you know, a pet is a force of nature. All right. You can't get mad at lightning for striking a tree.
Right.
And you can't get mad at a dog for trying to bite somebody or biting someone.
Okay?
Okay. It's your fault if you get bitten.
Right.
That's my maxim. Okay.
Okay.
If I get bitten at work, it's my fault. Okay. If a child gets bitten, it's the parent's fault.
Right.
It's not the dog owner's. It's not the dog's. And if you don't know much about dogs, then you need to be aware of that fact. And you need to talk with that owner. So here's how it should go down. Okay. And this is what I told my kids early on. You do not go up to any dog without checking with me first. If you go up to a dog and I haven't authorized it and that dog bites you, it's your fault.
Okay.
Or my fault.
Okay.
Because you didn't listen to me. And ultimately, that's my fault for not making the point that you should have listened to me, right?
Right, right.
As the parent, it's your responsibility.
So now you're a veterinarian. You know and can assess a dog's personality. How does a regular parent do that?
So the first thing you do, okay, so I always tell my kids, you check with me first. And then what I do is I always go to the owner. I say, hey, my children would like to pet your dog.
Right.
Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is your dog okay with children? And whatever that person says, right, if they say no, he's kind of unpredictable, then I turn back to my child and I say, this is not a dog that you can pet.
Right.
This owner has told us this dog is unpredictable around children, and we're going to respect that. And no ifs, ands, or buts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the problem, of course, is when they're 2 years old, there's lots of ifs, ands, or buts, right? And the bottom line is, if that child tries to touch that dog and you've prohibited it, you need to do something about that.
Sure.
To, you know, I mean, I'm not saying hit your kid or anything, but you need to take that child aside and have a moment where you explain to them, this is dangerous. You wouldn't let your child go up to a hot stove.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now that that's been established, no, he's a nice dog. You can pet him. How do you approach the dog? Okay. Well, first of all.
Because that's not a guarantee. Right. I mean, just because the owner is going to say that.
Right.
Oh, right.
Right. So you've got to look at the dog's posture. So parents, how do you tell whether a dog is going to be an acceptable dog for your kids to touch? Well, okay, the owner's already said yes. So now, what are the dog's ears positioned? Right? Are the ears up, down? Where are the eyes? Are the eyes staring straight at you, or are they looking away from you? And we'll go over what all these things mean. Is the dog panting? Is its mouth open and its tongue's hanging out, but it's not panting and it's sort of, quote, smiling? Is the dog standing or sitting? If it's sitting, is it wagging its tail? If it's standing, is it wagging its tail? If it's standing, is it wagging its tail straight up in the air? Or is the tail horizontal and pointed down? Is the tail tucked in between the legs?
Yeah.
Right? So these are just one of many things you can look at. A dog that is going to be okay to interact with you will look you in the face for a few moments and look away. All right? It's not going to stare at you for more than a few seconds at a time.
And if it does, that's a challenge, because kids will want to make eye contact, and that can be a bad thing?
Exactly.
Okay.
Realize that human beings are the only species on the planet to show their teeth in a friendly way.
Interesting.
Okay? So, you know, what we interpret as a smile, you know, could not be. So if the dog stares at you in the eyes and doesn't turn away, that's not a dog you should be letting your kids pet. Most dogs will stare at you for a few moments and then look away. And the ear position can be up or it could be back. If it's back and the dog's not looking at you, if you move close to the dog and the dog moves away from you, that's not a dog you should be petting either.
Okay.
What you do is you get down on your knees or you get low. And if the dog, you know, the dog is showing some of the signs we just talked about, you put your hand out in a fist sort of towards the side of the dog, but far enough away from the dog that if it lunges at you, you can pull your hand back. And you wait to see, does that dog go to sniff your hand? Or does that dog turn its head away or even look at the owner? And that, once again, that's a situation that you should tell your child, do not move forward here.
Mm-hmm.
Give this dog a little bit. The dog should come to you.
Okay, right.
And the basic point is that dog should sniff your hand, maybe lick it, and it should come towards you.
And that's a natural reaction for kids, is that if it doesn't come to them, go to the dog.
And that's like the worst case scenario. That's the situation where your kid could get bitten.
Okay.
Because the dog's on a leash. It can't go anywhere.
Right.
Oftentimes, it's backed up against the owner. It cannot escape.
Right.
So what's it going to do? It's got to defend itself.
Yeah. It's backed into a corner now.
Exactly.
Okay.
So you need to be aware of that. So now the next step is you've got your fist out there. Let's say the dog's licked you, and it's showing all the good stuff that you want it to show. The first place to pet the dog, you don't want to pet it on the head. Your hand is too close to the mouth. Okay.
Okay.
B, how would you like it if someone came up to you and patted you on the head?
Okay. But that's such a natural reaction for people. I'm guilty of that. When you said that, I was like, I do that every time.
Most dogs, they're going to accept that, right?
Okay.
But it's sort of
the safer approach.
It's an assumption that you don't want to make with kids, right?
Right.
So the next step is you can take your hand, if the dog has licked you and is showing interest in you, you pet the side of the body. You know, maybe around the shoulder or the mid rib cage there. You just kind of touch it. And if the interaction's going well, the dog's going to continue to lick you or get excited and start kind of bouncing around. And then at that point, you know, connection's been made. You've shaken hands. You know, you can go to petting the head.
Okay.
All that other stuff has to happen first.
Right.
So, yeah, the situations you want to stay away from is the dog moves away from you. Okay. It stares you hard in the face, or it looks back at the owner, you know, and sort of fixates on the owner when the child's coming closer.
Okay.
Okay. Stay away from those situations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. All right. Well, I can't believe, but we are almost 40 minutes into this. This absolutely has been fantastic. I really want to thank you, Dr. Stone, for taking the time and sitting down with us and talking. We would love to have you back on the show, too.
Stay tuned.
I tell you what, if anybody has any questions out there or comments for the podcast, please throw them in our discussion group. And, you know, if we get enough together, maybe we can coax Dr. Stone to come back and chat with us again. So I really want to thank you so much. It's great information. And again, drop those comments in there, and hopefully we can get Dr. Stone back. All right. Thanks a lot, Dr. Stone.
Bye-bye.